a chick. So say goodbye to everything you ever knew before, and I'd understand if you were running out the door. And I'll keep you safe, and no harm will ever come to you, I swear. And I'll kill if they even dare.
Good whistle. Hello, Boot.
Hi, Your Highness.
I am high.
Oh.
Look at how high I'm sitting.
You're like 3 inches higher than normal.
I should be.
What are you, standing up properly? Sitting up?
No.
Good posture?
No, none of the above.
You're sitting on that donut ring because your butt's sore?
Maybe. Shut up. God.
Welcome to Michigan Murders and Music, where we discuss murders in our gorgeous state and top it off with a little homegrown music, leaving you with a happy ending and on a good note.
And you know what?
What?
It's the day after Christmas. There's not a lick of snow outside.
No, it's beautiful.
Why do they say lick of snow? There's not a flake anywhere to be seen except for a
couple of flakes up
maybe here in our podcast loft.
Right.
The sun is shining. It's beautiful. How have you been?
I've been really good.
Me too. Get
good.
A couple extra days off in the automotive
it's
land.
It's refreshing.
It's goddamn nice.
Your Highness. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
May I give an explicit content warning?
Please do that. And then we have things to ask of our peoples.
Okay. First of all, Her Highness is going to say some very naughty words.
My hemorrhoids hurt.
Well, okay. That's just inappropriate, but... Okay, in addition to that, if your kid never gets invited to his classmates' birthday parties.
Not one party?
Never, ever.
Oh.
That's not on us. He might be a dick.
He's either the fucking bully and or just a dick.
Right. And,
or,
and the other parents know, too. So, no, you cannot invite.
Yeah, the other parents are like, don't let Johnny come lately. Over to our party.
Right.
He comes lately. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So, and we don't have insurance for Johnny come lately crashing
no,
parties.
No, it's just a problem waiting to happen.
It's not okay. Oh, God. Man, look at you with your Saturday. So, we do have a very beginning Patreon. We're doing our pre-gaming videos, our pre-drinking pre-game drinking videos.
They're quite entertaining. We laugh at each other. It's great.
We'll be putting those up there. We have stickers if you guys would like. Just send us an email with your address, and I will snail mail you a sticker. We also have a few stickers of some of our bands left, so we'll give you one of those too.
For sure. Mail them right to your house.
Right, and we won't stalk you or anything. I don't have time for that kind of shit.
Thank you for allowing us to seep into your ears.
Thank you. I hope we clear a little bit of that Christmas wax out that you built up in defense of not listening to your sister or a relative of any sort. You know, you let that wax build up for like a month. Because
you know you're going to have to listen to that.
You have to deal with that. I'm sorry. You just agree with everything people say and it goes fine.
We would like to keep our podcast commercial free and independent. So if you're feeling a little tipsy, which we never get to that point.
We're fucking never tipsy. No, you only tip $4.
So
you get
we have
yelled at for
tip jar. On our website, and you can donate.
You can go to our website.
Help us to keep our podcast moving.
Flowing like
keep us
river.
From going broke doing
we have
this.
Merch, too, you guys. We have hoodies and hats and onesies and aprons and all kinds of Michigan murders and music galore. Go to our website. You can find it out. Do us a favor. Please share us with two friends or a coworker and a friend or... Maybe your coworkers are your friends. Share them.
Share them with one person. I don't care. It doesn't have to be two.
That would be great. Follow us on all the places. That would be cool too. Boot, What band are we featuring?
We're featuring
this week
a really cool band. They're kind of very different, and I like it a lot.
I like it a lot.
They're called Grave Next Door.
You gotta love the name and for our podcast.
The song is called Blood in the Sand.
Again, a little apropos.
Sounds like music that would come out of an old Western movie.
Da-da-da. That's just because we just watched Blazing Saddles.
That's not...
And I really laughed harder than I thought I would. Where are we going to throw up that Michigan mitten?
Detroit.
Yeah,
if you don't know where Detroit is by now.
It's in the ass crack of the thumb area.
Yeah.
A little lower heavy on the than ass your crack. Ass crack. We're going to not Detroit in today's day.
Right.
We're heading back to the
1920s.
1920s. Yo, when shit was still black and white. Yeah, it was. So you just shut it.
Yeah, like on TV and stuff.
Everything was black and white in the 1920s. People couldn't even see in color then. Didn't you listen in history class?
I know. I've seen photos from back then. Everything was black and white.
All right.
And crystal clear.
Don't say the name of the person. Just with the date there, guy.
August 20, 1920. From the second floor of the Detroit News Building, test radio broadcasts were being sent out into the airwaves for the first time.
Maybe not the first time, but the first-ish
time. Well, they're a test.
The Detroit News announced that they would have the first radio news program to complement their newspaper. It's kind of like a podcast.
It pretty much. Finally, after 10 days of testing the airwaves by playing music, it was time for the world's first, like, human doing a radio broadcast.
That's what I read. Don't come at me if this is not right, but I've read this in numerous places. On August 31st, 1920, from Detroit, Michigan, the station WMBC started the beginning of a four-hour program that began to hit the ears of people across the world.
The first part of the program announced the day's Michigan primary election results.
What? Politics.
Oh, yeah. Setting its tone for the type of station that it would want to be.
Commercial stations like NBC came out in 1926 and CBS came out in 1927. So the beginning era of radio,
it's
you
the
guys.
Bleeding edge.
It's like literally nothing like what we have available to us now.
Detroit in the 1920s was crazy, while the Great Depression would go on until 1933. Prostitutes, gambling, and illegal alcohol consumption.
It became illegal, and at times it, okay, and we were on a waterway there, so there was a lot of access to Detroit back then. Mm-hmm. So what happens is the city grew faster than any other city in the entire United States. Many immigrants had made Detroit their home. Actually, still do.
Right.
And it became the fourth largest city in the States.
On top of all that going on, prohibition was a thing. It was happening.
No, don't. Right don't here. Get my. Give, mm-hmm. Uh-uh, don't I'm take it. A, don't take it away from me. Okay, I didn't look too deeply into this because Boot and I were just talking about this. We want to do an episode on prohibition in Michigan.
We'll figure it out. We're going to do it.
I did read that Detroit was the perfect place for rum running, and our Canadian neighbors were more than happy to run their rum with us, and they did.
Rum running became the region's second largest industry, with gangs leading the entire organization.
That's fucking nuts. So completely illegal thing became the second largest industry in our state. I bet the first one was automobiles.
People are resourceful. You see some dollars, man. They're going to do it.
I'm telling you if it's illegal or not. Mm. Michigan, from what I heard, was the first state to hop into prohibition. Yeah, like, yes, they banned it in 1917, I believe.
I want to understand this. So they jumped in first, and then they
Before
were the first to
the
say.
Before the federal government even.
And then they were the first to say, nah, this is a bad
we're out.
Idea.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's how we roll. We're like, yeah, we're on the bandwagon. Ah, fuck you.
Right.
This is a stupid ass idea. Who wanted to quit drinking anyways? Hey. Hey,
oh
Governor,
my God. That
is that
hilarious.
Your idea?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Bunch of numbnuts.
Who was thinking of, and they probably were like, okay, this is leading to a lot of illegal situations happening.
Politically, Detroit was hot. Due to the prohibition and the illegal running of alcohol, crime was on the rise and the politicians were feeling it, even the politicians who were most likely involved in the crimes.
I mean, it's
Detroit.
It's nothing new.
Exactly.
Of any and or all politicians. So you guys kind of know a little bit of what was going on in Detroit in the 1920s. There were gangs, prostitutes. Boots got a smile on his face like he wishes he was living in that time. There was bootlegging going on.
Hey, easy.
Rum running. It was an organized, illegal, chaotic town, right?
Yep. Now that you know this about Detroit in the 20s, we're going to tell you about a man named Jerry Buckley.
Jerry Buckley was born in Detroit on April 5th, 1891.
Jerry served as an investigator for Henry Ford during the 1921 Newberry versus United States Supreme Court case, in which Ford legally challenged his defeat to Truman Newberry.
The Henry Ford.
Yeah, making cars and stuff.
Yeah.
The dude.
After the trial, Jerry continued to work as a government investigator on various legal cases.
In 1928, Jerry took his political and legal knowledge to the airwaves, starting with WMBC.
His broadcasting studios were on the top floor of the luxurious LaSalle Hotel. Actually, it started, I wrote this wrong, it started as the Savoy, it became the LaSalle, and then it became the Detroiter, and then it got imploded. But anyways, he had a pretty posh little recording area on the top floor of the LaSalle Hotel. That's where he did his recording.
It sounds awesome to me.
Yeah.
Like our little podcasting thing up here on our second floor.
Yeah, our building's not quite as pretty as that one was.
Oh, right.
Jerry used his platform to enact a campaign against the rampant and rising crime in Detroit.
When Bloody July of 1930 occurred, there were 10 men killed within 2 weeks, and Jerry went to the airwaves.
Side note, that's another story we want to cover, not going too deep into it right now. He, as in Jerry, verbally went after Detroit's police force and pointed out the new mayor, Charles Bowles.
I read that as Bowles, but anyway.
We can call him Bowles.
After the two failed mayoral campaigns, Charles Bowles was elected mayor of Detroit and took office in January of 1930.
I have a side note on that. Oh. The first campaign he ran, he was backed up by the Triple K.
Oh, the KKK.
Yeah, and he failed to win, which is kind of surprising. He ran again without the backup of the KKK, and then he won.
Jerry was happy to hop on to getting Charles out of office, and he called on his people of the radio of the world to help him.
He said, people of the radio. It's like Elon, people of Tesla. That's me. People of Tesla.
Put a towel under your seat.
Shut up.
Okay.
So Jerry basically hopped on the airwaves. He wanted people to help him roust about and get this guy out of the office.
And that depends on who's telling the story. The facts are a little bit obscure.
Yeah, some said that Jerry said he wanted him recalled, and some said that he didn't want the guy recalled, but it was known that he was standing up against the governor and the police for not doing anything about the crime that was happening right in front of their face and most likely with them.
Jerry Buckley had a bit of a nickname unknown to most people, but he was known in certain circles as the as the Pied Piper of Propaganda.
Yep.
I love that.
It'd be a great band name.
Yeah, it really would be.
It fucking would be. So basically he would, you know, if you were patting his palms, he might go your way a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Or if you were one of his friends, he would advocate for that kind of
thing. And you know how people are. You know,
it they still hear happens
it. It does.
To this day.
You hear it and you believe it.
Yeah, he was definitely for being so vocal about his thoughts. He was threatened numerous times, but he refused to hire any kind of security for his safety.
Time goes by. He is still rallying against the city and such because crime is rampant.
It's going out of control. So the night comes where Bowles is finally recalled. He is up for the recall vote. And you know that Buckley's sitting in the top floor behind his microphone with that old school microphone.
Yep.
Just waiting for the fucking results.
Mm-hmm.
Just waiting for that shit to come in across the Morse code. I don't know what they had. They probably had a walkie-talkie.
I don't know. Really sure.
Radio
what the
waves
was.
Were new, so I don't know.
Bowles was finally brought up for recall, and the vote was 57% of the people voted to have him removed from office.
Win-win.
Yeah.
Jerry, who was on the top floor of the LaSalle, reported on his radio program the results of the recall vote, which I'm sure he may have glorified and been quite happy about. He wrapped it up and headed downstairs to the lounge.
Was he going to get a martini or something?
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was pretty late.
It was. It was really late at night.
But, you know, if you're a prominent person, you might be able to get a cocktail at the
probably.
Bar if you want to. Fuck, he if it was me, I would just walk right behind the bar and be like, bitch, it's been a night.
If it was you, you'd have one stashed in your backpack.
Of course. Good Lord, I'd have been, never mind. Let's not talk about me. Back to Jerry.
So, yeah, he wrapped everything up and went home.
He didn't go home. It was really late.
Here we are.
He often stayed at the LaSalle, too, which was a different thing. But it was late or super early, depending on where you're at, by the time he wrapped up his show. On July 23rd, 1930, a car parked outside of the LaSalle Hotel. And two gunmen strolled right into the lobby, and they gunned down Jerry Buckley, and they got back into their escape car and took off. Escape car.
Escape car?
Escape. It's an escape. It was an electric car. Speaking of electric cars.
Oh, here we go
Henry
again.
Ford's in here.
Oh, yeah.
His wife had one.
They call it a girl's car, which was stupid. Or lady's car, woman's car.
Fine.
Whatever.
I want a lady's car, please.
Yeah.
Anyway,
lead acid or whatever.
That was a side note.
Police cars in Detroit had just put radios into their cars.
They had to be walkie-talkies, like the CB radios, right?
And once again, I don't know the technology of the day, so
God
I can't comment on that.
Somehow
that evening, the area's cops' radios went down.
Yeah, isn't that
suspicious?
Convenient? The mayor gets recalled, and the guy who wants him recalled gets shot. And
that's called a communications blackout.
Can't communicate about
mm-hmm.
it.
After his murder, Police Commissioner Wilcox said that Jerry was a known extortionist.
I tried to hold it back. I couldn't do it.
So Mr. Wilcox said that Jerry was a known extortionist and racketeer.
So did he put his body in weird places? In the park?
Oh, my.
Like his foot went up
That's a contortionist.
Wrong.
But, yeah, racketeer, contortionist. I can see where, you know, you rack yourself.
Yeah,
I get
confused.
Next thing you know. Anyway.
He was most likely had been killed because of his underworld connections.
In his attempt to tarnish Buckley's reputation, Wilcox produced an affidavit stating that the radio commentator had been paid $4,000 in protection money by a bootlegger.
Holy shit.
That's some huge cash. I mean, even in today's time, I'll take $4,000. That'll...
How much was $4,000 in 1920?
Oh, here she goes.
Here's a summary from Inflation Calculator. $4,000 in 1920 is equivalent in purchasing power to about $55,589.60 today.
Fucking A, Skippy.
There's so much I would do for
$55,000. What's the point of this $4,000 again? An attempt to tarnish Buckley's reputation. Okay, Wilcox said that Buckley had been paid $4,000 in protection money by a bootlegger. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's a lot. And look at me getting all excited over money that I'm not even seeing.
That's huge. And they could just give that to somebody.
Yeah, but the affidavit was soon dismissed as having been coerced. There's so much coercement in sleeping together and corruptness in this underlying between all these words that
and I'm sure there were death threats.
Oh my God.
Actual killings.
Holy
we know that.
Shit. Yeah. Like we said, the affidavit was soon dismissed as having been coerced. Buckley's brother, Paul, who was a former assistant prosecutor, claimed that the murder was orchestrated as revenge for the campaign against the mayor. Makes total fucking sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Different testimonies were given. And we got this from Wikipedia, and it says nobody was ever charged with the murders.
No, but there's another story. Well, actually, nobody was charged for the murder, so that is the truth. However, there were some mobsters. Like, 12 people were arrested, but 9 of them were let go. But they kept 3 of these mobsters.
We got some names here.
Yeah, they're all part of a bootlegging gang called the River Gang.
Angela Lavecchi.
Angelo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ted Pizzino.
Yeah. And?
You know, and Scarface, Joe Bomarino. These guys sound like Italians.
Dude. Okay, Joe Bomarino sounds like he's from the Happy Days.
Bomarino.
These guys were all okay. Scarface literally did have a body count under him, and I can't wait to fucking dig into his story.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's going to be a twofer episode. I don't know when I'm even going to have time.
I know we've barely scratched the surface.
Maybe
of
I
this
can do it
stuff.
When we fly to Vegas.
That's absolutely possible. It's
kind of entertaining because I'm probably just going to fall asleep.
And me too.
So anyways, those 3 guys from the River Gang, the bootlegging gang.
Horseface was one of them too.
Horseface. See, this is why we can't wait to tell the story of that story. They were all acquitted of Jerry Buckley's death because there just wasn't enough information. And to this day, it's been unsolved. But I think we know corruption was going on and there was some hoity-toityness happening.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody was not happy with someone yapping his trap.
Mm-hmm.
Like I do.
All the time.
That
can
is
we do
the
a
story
happy
of
ending.
Yes, radio dude. I couldn't find any of his radio clips, which is really effed up, but that's okay.
Recording was probably not a thing that was developed at that time, and they wouldn't even think about it.
You're right. They were so excited that they could just their airwaves out.
Yeah.
Now look at us. We can just pop in a card to a machine and just be like, bam, everybody hears our voice.
It's
and
weird.
It's all crisp and clear and not crackly. So super
technology.
Crazy. I want to go back in time sometimes.
That'd be weird.
Okay, who is our happy ending this evening?
We have a band called Grave Next Door.
Grave Next Door is built on experience as veterans, rock lifers, and road warriors. Grand Rapids, Michigan natives, Grave Next Door fuse Black Sabbath with the Melvins by the way of the Moody Blues for a unique approach to heavy rock. That is a pretty weird wave that you're riding on there.
Right.
The song is called Blood in the Sand, and we thoroughly enjoyed listening to it.
I really
loud.
Like it.
Loud.
Yeah.
So you guys turn up your music right now, and we are going to play Grave Next Door, Blood in the Sand. Peace out. Happy holidays. See you next time.
Bye-bye. We don't suck. Mm-hmm.
trails, walls of lead. Let them run through it, now they're all dead.
Thank you for choosing Michigan Murders and Music. Please rate the show wherever you listen. Michigan Murders and Music is produced by The Boots. Episodes are researched and written by Your Highness. Edited by Your Highness. Views and opinions are the sole stupidity of us and us alone. Don't blame others, please. Listening to this podcast could quite possibly cause major problems to your earballs and definitely will mess up your kids. Permission has been given to us by the bands, and we purchase our music on Bandcamp.com. Support your local music scene and all local music scenes.